Yes, the same kind of story seems to come down from long ago. Two friends having coffee together when something flies by their window. It might be out on that lawn, which is wide at least half of the playing field. Because there's no explaining that your imagination can make you see and feel. Somebody wants me to feel. You're hypnotized.
Live from the Gateway to the West, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And our guest tonight, twin sisters, Shirlene Wallace, Earlene Carr. Their website, by the way, is linked right up now with coasttocoastam.com. It's called ufotwins.com, and there's a reason it's called that. Back with more. Shirlene, in your book, you describe cloning. Tell me a little bit about that experience.
Yes, okay, I'd love to. I was guided by an entity to a place. I wasn't told the name of the place I went, but I was allowed to see a clone of myself that was in an enclosed glass box. Now, the clone was very interesting in that it was identical to me. It was more identical than my identical twin sister.
Now there were three of you running around.
Exactly. It was incredible. So anyway, the clone was, it was not an embryo. It was fully grown. And it was upside down in this enclosed glass structure, a tinted glass box. And it was almost curled up like a fetal position, in a fetal position. Its eyes were closed. Its hairstyle was different from the hairstyle I was currently wearing at the time. Its hair, it was up, swept up, and my hair, I was wearing it down more so. So the hairstyle was something I hadn't worn in a couple of years almost. And then it had a nightgown on that I have to this day, an identical nightgown. And the weird thing was, although it was turned upside down, this gown did not fall. It should have fallen, I would think, fall down, but it didn't. It just stayed in place while this clone was held upside down. And it was like in suspended animation. It was just there. They never explained why it was there. Later, I got an impression, so to speak, after when I returned from these experiences, I typically try to figure them out or analyze them or talk with my sister and actually I do gain some more insight when I do that, but I gain the ideal that ultimately someday I may inhabit that body. When this body gives out, that I would inhabit that body. And so it just sits there now. It's just a rest. It's just waiting.
Wherever it may be, right?
Wherever it may be. I had another cloning experience that I don't talk about in the book because it happened after the book was published. But I was taken to a planet where it was written. Now, this one was really unique in that the individuals, the everyday people, were cloned on this planet. And elitists, politicians, presidents, anybody of that nature, of that status, were not cloned. So they kept the original true to its form, true to itself. They would not allow, for example, a president to be cloned, whereby here, which would be the opposite of, I think, the way we think here on Earth. We would think if we would want to preserve our presidents or preserve our political leaders or our great leaders in our history, we may want to preserve them by cloning them. On that planet, it was totally the opposite. They would only have the exact replica. They would not have a replica of a president, but they would of the everyday people, the common people, everybody like that could be cloned. So I was introduced to a gentleman who had a clone, and the clone was so, it was just so identical. But there was a difference. You could sense a little bit of a difference in them. He didn't have the same energy that the original had, but identically they look alike. Physically, there was no difference, but the energy was a little different in the clone versus the original.
What did their planets look like?
Oh, well, there are so many different ones. For example, I discussed the Crystal City. I think of all the ones I've seen that has visited, that one stands out in my mind probably more so than any other because of its magnificence and its beauty. The Crystal City was the experience I had in January of 1997. I was taken to guided by an entity. Again, they typically come in my room, and ultimately I depart with them. And I was taken by this entity to look at this, to view a crystal city. This city was composed entirely of mammoth, huge crystal buildings. The buildings, some of them formed triangles, pyramid style, like we had in Egypt. One of the buildings had a crown shape, whereby there were crevices in it. It looked like a crown, but it's a dome-shaped crown-type building. It's beautiful, these huge, huge buildings, and they were so large, and you just know there was something that could not have been made by man. And the buildings had lights that danced off of it, just beautiful color pastel lights that just constantly danced off of it, and it had an energy. This whole entire city, Crystal City, possessed its own energy. So when you came into the presence of it, you were just awestruck by the beauty of it, the size of it, the fact that it was all completely composed of crystal, something that, you know, we couldn't replicate here on Earth if we wanted to. It was just magnificent. And I think that was one of the most incredible things I've experienced in visiting a different reality.
What about the beings? You don't talk much about them. You know, you mentioned the evil ones, basically, mm-hmm. that they were kind of shadowy. Mm-hmm. But what about the beings? What did they look like?
Well, they differed. My experiences vary so much. I talk about a group in my book that I call the Stone People. The reason I call them the Stone People is because they were a group of beings who basically looked just like we would consider a stone. For example, if you go to a graveyard and you see these very high or tall tombstones, that's what they look like, except they possessed an energy. They were able to move, to turn, to have facial expressions. They were almost animated, but yet they were as real as you or I are. And they were very, very interesting. They actually had different facial expressions. They were different from each other, yet they were all very similar. And so they were very unique. They stood about 8 feet tall, and they were composed of stone. And it made me think of our Easter Island stone. And actually, when I returned from that experience, I did some research on the stone that Easter Island stones, and I learned that the inhabitants of that island said that the stones marched in place, marched to their very place that they are today. And I could really, that made sense to me after visiting this group of entities who were composed of stones. I know that, and it all sounds very strange, but yet this is what I was exposed to. Another group I interacted with was I call the pillow-looking being in the book. This particular entity was unique, was very, very different. I was taken to her, it was a female. I was taken to her bedside because she was dying. She was in the process of dying. I guess it was thought that I should see her or be there at that point in time. And so I was taken to her. And she looked like, it was very, very hard to describe, but she basically looked like a pillow, horizontal pillow. Yet, again, facial expression, had an essence, had an energy. I was able to acknowledge me, yet she was in the process of dying at the time. And it was very, very heartbreaking to have that experience. And I don't know why I was taken to visit this entity, but that was one of the other life forms I interacted with. I also interacted with what we consider the grays, the large head, big black triangular eyes, triangular head, shiny uniform. Ironically, my sister and I were talking once. One evening, and of all the experiences I'd had up to that point, we were talking about the fact that I'd never interacted with what's commonly considered or called the grays. So as soon as we discussed that, lo and behold, I go to bed, and here they appear at the head of my bed.
How many of them?
There were three. And I never will forget how big those heads were. They were huge triangular heads, and I remember when we were little, we used to have a top. We'd spin that top, and that top head was a triangular type of toy. And that's how these heads look. I just can't forget those big triangular heads. Big black eyes, and they had the shimmering suits on with a turtleneck real tight, and their suits were real tight, and they seemed to glow. They had illuminated. And they gave me a shot. I typically receive some type of medical treatment, sometimes shots, sometimes some type of processing.
You mean from them or everybody? All of them?
From various beings.
Okay.
And this particular time I received a shot, I was levitated above the bed, given a shot, I really was glad to get that shot because the next day I said, I finally got some proof here. I can go to, I brought it up in my arms. I ran over to my sisters and her husband. And I said, here it is. And they were able to view it, and we decided, well, let's go to the hospital. Let's get this documented. Let's get a doctor's opinion, which we did. And that turned out to be very interesting. He could not describe why the shot was there. He asked me, of course. I told him, I blurted out my whole story. I don't know what he must have thought, but... Anyway, back to the beings, they just left. They levitated in air, and they just disappeared.
Did any of these beings ever talk to you about a supreme being, their belief in that?
No.
Never?
No. On one occasion, I spoke and talked with them about their life on their planet. I was interested in knowing what their experience of certain things were. For example, I wanted to know about poverty, the things that affect us here on Earth. I wanted to know about poverty. Do you have such a thing as poverty? And they said no. I said, do you have anything called war? And they said no. I said, how about racism? Again, no.
They're way advanced than us, aren't they?
They're so much more advanced than us. These are things that I believe have evolved through or grown through, and they are so far advanced in it. It was just very strange to me that they had none of these experiences. And I was curious because I was wanting to discuss how they dealt with them, but they didn't have them to even deal with.
You know, as you, I guess, Earlene now, your sister, I assume most of the contacts were done through Shirlene. Is that true, Earlene?
Yes, okay. That's true. I've had a couple of my own. I recycle in my home. I recycle bottles and plastics and papers, and I finally got my family trained. It took years, but everybody knows, don't throw away papers, bottles, plastics, and aluminum. Anyhow, I went to bed one night, and I found myself, I was over a land mass, and you know how you look down from an airplane window and you see the ground, and that's what it looked like. And I kept going higher and higher and higher, and suddenly I was on another planet. And I was in an office building, and I found there were human-looking people there, and they were telling me that, do you not realize that there are 8 other planets that do not practice recycling? And I said, no. Well, first of all, I couldn't believe there were 8 other planets that they knew of that had intelligent life on them. So that fascinated me at first. But then the fact that, I don't know that I didn't bring that experience of recycling daily into that realm with me. But I found that very interesting that, you know, they told me that there were other planets that did not practice this. And then I had another experience in which I was on another planet, and there was a human-looking woman. She was white, and I put my arm against her arm, and I asked her to put her arm out. And I was trying to explain what we have called racism on this planet, and telling her how, because of the fact that my skin is darker than hers, my people are treated in a different way on my planet. And she couldn't fathom it. She just couldn't understand what in the world I was talking about, because like Shirlene said, that she just didn't have a frame of reference for that. And then Shirlene hasn't gotten yet to the experience that she had on Mars, which she's going to share with you. But I did, after her experience on Mars, I was in prayer, thanking the Creator for the experiences that had come into my life that helped substantiate what she was told on the planet Mars, which she will share with you. And just as I had finished that prayer, George, I was just snapped into another dimension, and I knew I was going to Mars. And I'm there on Mars, and I'm telling myself, because I'm the fraidy cat here, I'm telling myself, I'm not going to be scared. But I black out. I wouldn't doubt that it's in my subconscious, but I do not recall
anything. You don't recall anything out there? The face,
yes,
on Mars, nothing?
Nothing, and I wanted to so much, but I had the feeling of being far, far away. It was very distant. It was a whole new world, and I knew it was Mars. I mean, I knew within my heart of hearts I was on Mars, because I was just saying a prayer of a great gratitude for the experiences, which we're going to get in and share with you too.
With these entities, did they ever share with you Earth catastrophes or things that could happen in the future?
On one particular experience, I was taken out into the galaxy, and I was shown, I call that chapter the wastebasket in the sky, because I was shown a mushroom cloud, much like Hiroshima.
Uh-oh.
Yes, it was. It was frightening. It was sad. And it was occurring right outside of our galaxy in huge, huge smoke and clouds and so forth. And they have the ability to vacuum that up and suck that right out of the air, out of the galaxy. It was much like you would take your vacuum sweeper and suck up dirt. It was truly amazing. So I call it the wastebasket in the sky, basically. But I got the impression that this is what we're creating. We're creating that problem, nuclear waste, here on Earth, and it's going out into the galaxy as well. And they're watching it, they're monitoring it, and they can help us, or they can alleviate it. But we're continuing to do it, and we're not thinking about what we're doing. We're just not caring about what we're doing with our nuclear waste and the potential for much, much greater nuclear warfare.
Did they ever tell you if we have the ability to alter things, or are we stuck with whatever happens?
No, I've never gotten the impression that we're ever stuck, because we do have choice. We have free will, and we make our own choices. And they prefer for us to make our own choices, and even our own mistakes, because that's just how we learn. If we didn't allow our children to make mistakes, our children wouldn't learn. And I think they look at us pretty much like children, sometimes with matches. But they're allowing us to make these mistakes and hopefully learn from our errors and our mistakes and change our ways.
When we come back, what I want to do is open up the phone lines for people who have had contact as well, and see if they'll share some of those stories with both of you. Maybe you can also give them some advice. Have you found that there are a lot of people on this planet that have had similar episodes occur with them?
Yes, we have received so many people have written, emailed, called, and shared their own experiences. And what we do is encourage them to do that, continue to do that, because it's an ideal whose time has come. We have a right to know the truth, and I think the more we talk about it, the more we bring it out, the more our society will begin to accept that this is a reality.
Do you think government will ever come true with us?
Ernie?
I do. I think it's inevitable. I'm really encouraged by the work of Dr. Stephen Greer with the Disclosure Group,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that he's brought so many military experts out and retired military people that have told their own individual experiences. I greatly admire Richard Hoagland, who was just on prior to us, and he's worked in this capacity for many years, and I've followed his work, and I've always admired his courage and tenacity, and I believe he's truly going to have the last laugh as far as life on Mars is concerned. And we're not afraid of the L word. We know there's life there, and we will be sharing that. But yes, I think it has to come, because we can't continue in the way that we're going in terms of, you know, the warfare and the poverty and the polluting of the oceans and the air. I look to these beings as having the answers, and I believe that this is why our government suppresses that. And I believe they, of course, know this, too. I believe they back engineered a lot of fallen craft, and a lot of the technology that we have today is a direct result of that. So, yes, I just feel very strongly that it is forthcoming.
Well, I tell you what, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the possibilities of life on Mars. We'll get both of your take on that and what kind of life that may very well be. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
The official website of Coast to Coast AM is www.coasttocoastam.com. Log on now. Somewhere deep below the earth, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. To reach George from west of the Rockies, dial 800-618-8255. From east of the Rockies, dial 800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach George by dialing area code 818-501-4721. International callers may reach George by dialing your in-country Sprint access number and pressing option 5. Then dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
I'd like your abduction stories, your contact stories, as we continue our discussion with Shirlene Wallace and Earlene Carr in a moment. Twin Sisters on Coast to Coast AM. Earlene, because of your twin, Shirlene, do you sometimes have that synergy with her where you know what she's doing, she knows what you're doing?
No, we don't have that going on. A lot of people have asked us, but one of the things we found that we do in common is a lot of times if we're together, we will finish the same sentence at the same time, saying with the exact same words. Sometimes, what else do we do, Shirley? Oh, what was really strange was I was at her home years ago when she was still living in Kansas City, and she was in the living room, I was in the kitchen, and the dining room separated us. She did not want to get up and turn out the light in the dining room, and she wanted it off, but did not want to get up to do it. And for some reason, I have no idea why, I walked out of the kitchen, went into the dining room, and turned out the dining room light. And she said, why did you do that? I said, I don't know. So we've had you know, a couple of experiences like that.
Tell me about Mars. What happened there?
Okay. Mars, very, very interesting experience. It occurred, first of all, in October of 1996. I was visited by some entities who looked very human. And by the way, many, many of my experiences, I'm interacting with human-looking beings.
Okay.
There were about, I'd say three women that came into my room and escorted me out. Now, some of my travel is not always in a ship. Sometimes it's projection, astral projection, whereby my astral body is leaving the physical body behind. But I felt as though I was being astrally pulled out. And then what I believe occurs is I dematerialize and rematerialize physically in another location. So that's the impression I was having, or actual experience I was having with the Mars experience. I was spiritually pulled out and then physically rematerialized once on the planet. But however, I went, in this process, I went through what felt like a tunnel to get to. I didn't take a ship. I was thrust through a black tunnel, so to speak, similar to the afterlife experiences you've heard about and read about. So after going through that, I was suddenly found myself in a laboratory setting. And I was, again, rematerialized. I felt physical. I felt very much in that whole environment of physicality, because I was being examined. Quite often I'm being examined in these experiences, heart and lungs and chest and all of those things, blood pressure and all of those things. And so I was found myself in a laboratory, a hospital-like setting, and I was interacting with beings that composed of all different races, Caucasian and African American, or not African, at least black anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I was being experimented on, and I decided I'm going to try to strike up a conversation with these entities, because that's what you do when you're meeting with people you don't know. You try to make small talk. So I thought about what on earth could I think to talk about to these beings. So I remembered that a rock had been found in the, I think it was Antarctica, and on this rock were small microorganisms that...
Right, the meteorite.
Found. Okay, mm-hmm. Yes. And that proved to our scientists, that was a big finding, exciting news, and that proved to our scientists that life could have existed millions and millions of years ago. So I remember that story, and I decided to share it with this individual who was a Caucasian male who was examining me. So I shared this whole story with him. He didn't say very much. He didn't respond or react that it was, you know, great big exciting news that I thought it was anyway. And he simply responded, "We are well aware of your findings." And that was it. It's almost like that's no big deal. And then when I thought about it, it may have looked a little bit ridiculous that I was sharing with him we found a rock with microorganisms on it, which proves that life could have existed millions of years ago, when already I'm on the planet, I'm told I'm on Mars, and I'm interacting with people there anyway.
So do you think there are occupants on Mars right now?
Yes, I do. And I interacted with them. So that's what was occurring at this time. So this individual, he guided me to a computerized map on the wall, and he showed me terrain, mountains, and landscapes, and areas that were occupied. And he pointed one, and I tried to remember the names of them. The only one I could commit to to my memory was a place called U, Y-U. And he was saying that basically, it was a map like we have of Earth, except it was Mars. And yes, it's inhabited, and yes, there are people in this area, there's people in that area, their named areas are named, and you was the only one I could recall or remember. And then I was, in that experience, I was, my whole conversation was overheard by another individual who joined the conversation, and she was a black female. And she came out, and I really decided I couldn't comprehend this information. I couldn't really digest it. I wasn't certain how to react to the information that he told me after that, which was that Mars is predominantly black. And I couldn't comprehend that. I couldn't understand that. Mars is predominantly black. And so another woman entered the room who had overheard the conversation, and she reiterated, Mars is predominantly black. And again, I couldn't understand that. I couldn't understand why is she telling me this? What does that mean? I just basically wanted to keep changing the subject. But they were telling me that this planet was occupied predominantly by black people. And they looked at me as though, don't you know this? Don't you remember?
Hmm.
Don't you remember?
We can't call it the red planet anymore. Huh?
No. Matter of fact, I didn't see any red. But yes, it was predominantly black. And so the first male, the Caucasian male explained, told me that, and then the black female came in and reiterated it. And again, I was just having difficulty in comprehending that. And so I changed the subject to something else. I was looking at the wall, and on the wall, it was amazing. On the wall was a picture of a family picture that we've had in our family for years when we were children. Our mother had it in the living room, and you know how you look at pictures when you're little and gaze at them. Our mother had the strangest picture. It showed pyramids. It showed a yellow moon. Weird, strange picture. I don't know where she could have gotten it. It's one of those old velvet-looking pictures that she found somewhere, and she put it up in
those
the house.
Those velvet ones. She bought it in front of a gasoline station.
Exactly. One of those. It was a weird canoe and a little river and a weird-looking buildings and a yellow moon. And we looked at that over the years. And here I was on Mars seeing that picture in front of me. So I told the lady, that the African-American, or the black woman that I was talking to, I recognized the picture. And she said, yes. And I said, well, we have that picture in our family. She said, yes, I know. It's in your second room. Well, I thought about that. I didn't know what a second room meant. So, and I knew I didn't have the picture in my house. And I realized Erlene had the picture. And it was in her second room, because if they consider the living room the first room, the master bedroom was the second room. That's where the picture was.
And they would spot it, I guess, during their visitations.
With Erlene as well. Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
So she told me it was in your second room. And actually, the experience pretty much at that point, the major components of that experience, I write about in the book, but primarily it ended.
Do you think we're seeded by them on this planet?
I like Erlene to address that, because when I came back, I shared the experience with her of what I was given on Mars, a black occupy or dominate that planet. She had an interesting reaction, and that she will share with you and probably answer that question as well.
Well, what happened, George, after Shirlene came back from that experience and told me that she was told that blacks dominate the planet Mars, of course, I was just, oh my God, this is incredible information. And I didn't have any problem believing it, because, you know, when we look at antiquity, we look at the majority of, Africa, of course, was land of the black people, present-day Iraq, which was formerly Mesopotamia, all of that area indeed was black, and still today, black people are 9/10 of the population of the world, whereas white people are 1/10. So I had no problem in believing it to be true, but as the Creator would have it, this was just incredible what was to happen. I was in a 7-Eleven store one morning, and I stopped in usually to buy coffee and make small chit-chat with the young lady who would ring me up. She was from Ethiopia, and you know, I never really said much, just, you know, how are you doing? It looks like it's going to be a nice day today. But this particular morning I was in there, it was really, really different. And something was telling me, tell her about your sister's experience of going to Mars and being told that black people dominate that planet. And I said, okay, I don't want to do this. I was like, I don't know her that well. I don't know what she's going to think of me, and she's going to think I'm crazy. And I just didn't feel comfortable doing that, because she was virtually a stranger, with the exception of just, you know, making small chit-chat when I saw her each morning. But it was unrelenting. It would not stop. And so I just gave in, because the feeling was so powerful and so overwhelming and so unrelenting. So I just blurted it all out. And she said, she didn't bat an eye. She said, oh, yes, that's true. It's in our history books back in Ethiopia. Our ancestors came from the planet Mars. As a matter of fact, I could have my mother send for my history book back in Ethiopia for you to see. I couldn't read Ethiopian, but I was like, what? I had to have her repeat it. I was just really, really shocked. I couldn't believe it. But she repeated it. I heard it correctly. So a few months passed by. I went to a to a lady who had an African dress shop in an area of Dallas called Wynwood Village. And she was older than the first young lady, and this woman, the older woman, was from Nigeria. So I thought, well, let me pose this question to her and this scenario and see what kind of feedback she can give me. She's older and elder. She might be able to really enlighten me on this subject, and indeed she did. I told her the same story about my sister's experience of going to Mars and what she was told, and she said, yes, this is true. Our ancestors came from the planet Mars, and they settled in what they call Africa to mine the gold because it was most plentifully found there. But because of the influence of Islam and Christianity, all that had been suppressed and went underground. She said you could not talk about these things anymore as both of these religions emerged on the continent. So she said if you go into some of the villages today and talk to some of the elders, you can still see shrines to this very day dedicated to our ancestors from the planet Mars.
That's amazing.
Oh, George, I tell you, it was so amazing. I felt like Alex Haley. You remember the movie and the book Roots, where he goes
absolutely.
Back and traces his ancestry to Africa? But I was now being told of an ancestry that went beyond our planet, that all the way reached to another planet. And it was just so phenomenal. And I felt like, you know, this is, I'm getting a link to a galactic family that we've never had before. And it made me realize how successful the slave traders had been in cutting off all our knowledge of our history and our knowledge of ourselves and our religions and our culture and everything, because all of the she was telling me was what was passed down through oral traditions in Africa. And she said, but if you talk to young people in Africa today, they don't know this, she said, because they are either Muslim or Christian, and that is not a part of the origin story.
What do African Americans say to you when you tell them this story?
They're, for the most part, intrigued. I would say that's a good word for it. Because African Americans as a whole are very much deeply entrenched in Christianity. It's very hard for some of them to accept it, to fathom it. But some, and you get all degrees, some find it totally fascinating. We were on an African-American talk show. We were scheduled for 1 hour. It turned into three, and we still didn't get to all the lines. But there is interest, and there are, we're getting a lot of emails from African-Americans that are sharing their experiences. I think it has been a subject that has been very taboo within our culture, simply because we were told, and I talk about this in the book, anything that had to do with the occult or mysticism or things of this nature were not to be, as far as Christianity is concerned, discussed, and it was looked upon as taboo and evil and so forth. And so our link to our spirituality had really been cut off, and we lost that connection to spirit that we had, that our ancestors had in Africa. And it was our understanding of it was totally redefined in a new context, that of Christianity.
You know, I've always been fascinated by the ancient stories that talk about extraterrestrials. And
me too.
If there's that kind of history there, that could be something else. Let's go to take some phone calls while we're here. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast with both of us and the twins.
Hi,
of course, I'm
George.
A Gemini, so there's two of me, too, I guess. Yeah, hi.
This is George?
Yeah, it sure is.
What an honor. You are number one. Well, I just have a quick little story that I'd like to share with you.
Sure.
This happened back in 1965, August or July of 65. Of course, back then you weren't really allowed to talk about flying saucers, or people thought that, you know, something was wrong with you. But my mother and I were taking my sister. She had a late flight out at the Indianapolis airport. That's when I lived in Crawfordsville, Indiana, and we're driving her to the Indianapolis airport. And we just dropped her off at the curbside, and Mom and I just started out of the terminal, and you know how busy that can be with cars and lights and signs and everything. And then it got very confusing because we just circled and started to leave the terminal, and I was driving, Mom was the passenger. And we found ourselves on just a straight, dark road, no signs, no other vehicles, no buildings, no lights, no anything. It was just a straight, dark road. And off to the right side, on Mom's side, there was a flying saucer, very close, and it was shooting down different colored lights towards through the ground. And Mom said, "Do you see that?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Do you see the different lights?" And I said, "Yes." All at once, the pavement ended off, and the car dropped down like 2 inches onto dirt. And we were both scared. And I remember kind of whizzing the car around, getting back up onto the pavement again. The flying saucer still stayed right with us. And from that, all at once there were signs again and other cars. And this was about 11 o'clock at night. And what should have taken like an hour and a half from Crawford's, Indianapolis, back to Crawfordsville, all the way home, we could see the flying saucer way off in the distance at this point. But when we finally got home, it was still off in the city, but then it took off. And what should have taken an hour and a half took 3.5 hours. So Mom and I lost 2 hours out of our life that we cannot account for, we cannot remember anything about. So really, I guess I can ask a question. Do you understand why that's been blocked out of our memory and what, you know, what really happened?
All right, and I'll let you listen on your radio. What do you think happened to her? Charlene or Erlene?
I think she was an experiencer. And oftentimes, information is blacked out for our protection based on where we are with this whole phenomenon, if we are ready to accept it. And it's not an easy thing to always accept that you've been taken off, particularly against your own will. You've been taken somewhere where you don't know, and it's very frightening. Some people have had traumatic experiences, nightmares. We've met and talked with people who sleep in helmets because they want to protect themselves from being taken somewhere, and they were told to wear a helmet at night.
See, and I sometimes have always thought that the blacking out or the non-memory was also a defensive mechanism that they give us, because maybe some people can't cope with it. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment. We'll continue to take phone calls with our guests, Charlene Wallace and Erlene Carr, twin sisters, the UFO twins. Back in a moment.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.